Hey there, Rick Singeri of Vermont Edition. Just want you to know this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. On town meeting day this past March, the town of Westminster passed a $4.89 million school budget without much debate. Problem is, it wasn't supposed to, at least not according to the state. The State Board of Education has told Westminster and the neighboring towns of Grafton and Athens that they need to merge districts under the provisions of Act 46. But this state plan does not sit well with residents of these towns, and they've decided to fight. And to fight probably all the way up to the Vermont Supreme Court. In a little while, we'll talk with the school board chairman in Westminster to get a better understanding of what the situation is like in his community. But first, we're going to get a handle on where things stand statewide with Act 46 and then talk about some of the legal issues at play in these court cases. Lola DeFore joins us first. She's VT Digger education reporter. Lola, it's nice to have you on the show.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
Can you remind us just at base the point, the aim of Act 46 and what these merged school districts are supposed to do for education in the state of Vermont?
Right. So Act 46 was supposed to confront the problem of declining enrollments and rising costs. So the theory behind the law was that if you had slightly larger districts, you could better use dollars. You know, it's harder for a single small school to hire, say, like a French teacher. But if you're splitting that French teacher between three schools, you can, you know, offer it without spending so much money.
And then Secretary of Education Rebecca Holcomb repeatedly said when she would come on Vermont Edition, it's not just about money. This is not just about money. It's about providing better educational opportunities for students across the state by doing things like what you were saying, Lola, being able to combine forces to have a French teacher or to have an art teacher who could cross different schools, and that there would be sort of an ease of the process, but also perhaps better opportunities for these kids in these schools with declining enrollment.
Right. It was always about both, making better use of dollars and offering more opportunities because, you know, we've increasingly heard as enrollments declined about schools letting go of all of their electives or, you know, their more challenging courses because it was getting too expensive.
And so in terms of outcomes, or is it too early to see? I mean, what are we actually seeing in terms of whether that's working?
I think it's certainly plenty of school officials across the state will point to anecdotal successes. You know, they'll say we saved $600,000 here. We added X amount of courses. But there's been no systemic, you know, analysis of whether or not this really saved money or increased opportunity, which is something that critics of the law often say. But there's plenty of anecdotal evidence that this has helped in places that have merged. And I mean, of course, you know, even the oldest mergers are 2 to 3 years old now. So it's hard to, you know, look at any long-term outcomes because the law is still fairly new.
There are no long-term outcomes yet.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the fears of many people in places with small schools was that even though the law as written and as executed was designed to merge districts, that what it would result in eventually is the closure of small schools. And what are we seeing on that score?
Well, we have seen at least one small school close under a merged board. But you've also seen people say, you know, we were able to save our small school and make it more viable within a larger district. So I think there's evidence on both sides that this, you know, has hurt and helped small schools.
And there are a few, haven't they, districts that have just closed their school sort of preemptively?
Well, there was one, Holland, for example, closed their school kind of preemptively, A, because the financials just weren't working. And also this was part of this kind of legal strategy, which it's an open question whether or not it would have worked, to block a merger. Ultimately, the state didn't decide to merge them. But so it was kind of a weird case.
Hmm. How do you, I should have told you that I wanted to ask you this beforehand, but do you know offhand how many districts we have now? Because we used to have like more than 260.
Oh, I should really know that.
But quite a few fewer, right? I mean, we're looking at more like, isn't it like, you know, it's 60 or 70 or 50 or something like that.
Something like that, under 100.
Under 100. All right, we're going to stick to that. Under 100 school districts now, from a high of, as I said, more school districts than there were towns in the state for a while. So by that score, we've certainly reduced and concentrated the number of districts. And in terms of how the process has gone for merging, we've talked a little bit about what are the outcomes. But by and large, has it been a smooth process, would you say, a bumpy process, a terrible process in terms of actually getting communities to merge their districts?
I would say it's extremely variable across the state, mm-hmm. right? Some places really took their cues from leaders on their school boards and their central offices that were well-liked and really respected in their communities and that were able to kind of build a consensus in the community for a merger. And then in some places, you know, it's just been an extraordinarily divisive process that's turned relatively well-functioning, if little Byzantine units into, you know, kind of created all that war and really a lack of trust, especially between some central office administrators and school boards. So it's just been extremely variable.
We're talking about Act 46 district mergers today. We're getting an update here from Lola DeFore about just the sort of process overall and where things stand now. In a couple of minutes, we're going to talk about the legal issues at play in the lawsuit that more than 30 Vermont towns brought against the state saying this is unconstitutional. We shouldn't have to do this. This isn't going to work for our community. So if you have questions about the legal issues or you have questions for the Westminster School Board Chairman, David Major, who's going to be on later in the show, now is a great time to call. You can also share what's happening in your community. You can post notes on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.org, or you can call 800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Lola, you were saying that, you know, it is, of course, extremely variable how this has gone for different communities and different towns and districts in Vermont. So describe who the outliers are now and where things stand with those towns.
So there are a collection of a few dozen school districts that are resisting this, and they're resisting this mostly in the courts right now. There are three lawsuits that have been filed against the state. So there's the lawsuit that we most often talk about, which is the joint lawsuit with over 30 school districts. I'm going to go ahead and refer to that one as the Athens lawsuit because that's the first plaintiff.
Right. They're doing it alphabetically. Judge Mello calls it the Athens lawsuit because Athens is alphabetically the first, not the most important town,
yes.
Although it's clearly very important.
Yes. And then there's the Stowe and Elmore Morristown lawsuit, and they're jointly suing the state, and they've been ordered to merge. And then you have the Huntington lawsuit, and Huntington is suing the state and also Mount Mansfield. Huntington is kind of a weird merger because the state is asking Mount Mansfield, which is a unified district in the Chittenden East Supervisory Union, to absorb Huntington. That's because Mount Mansfield has technically already complied with the law, so they can't be forced to merge. But because Huntington, at least in the eyes of the state, has not complied with the law, they don't get a say. It's Mount Mansfield that gets to decide whether or not to absorb them. And so Huntington has sued Mount Mansfield and the state. So that's kind of where the three parties. So the most action legally has taken place with the Athens lawsuit, where we've seen two rulings already from a Franklin County Superior Court judge.
And we're going to get more into that in a minute. But I also want to ask you, while we have you, Lola, to describe what the legislature is doing, because they're trying to sort of figure out a patch that can help avoid crashing into this July 1st deadline, where it does not appear that everything is going to be resolved. So can you sketch out what the two plans look like in the House and Senate?
Right. So the legislature has been asked for a one-year delay. The House, basically, their plan is they picked a group of districts and said, you guys get a delay, and the other group, you don't. You have to merge by June 30th. The Senate has taken the approach, a process approach. So they've said, if you want a delay, this is what you have to do. And what they're asking districts to do is actually form unified boards and put those in place and have those unified boards vote to delay. And so they're asking people to kind of show a good faith effort to start the process of merging, but not to implement the merger. So, you know, you'll have a unified board, but you can still have independent budgets, which makes it easier to untangle if ultimately, say, the Supreme Court says, you guys were right, Act 46 was unconstitutional, forced mergers can't happen.
Hmm. And where do those stand? Because we're coming up on several deadlines, including the end of the legislature's time in Montpelier.
Right. So right now, there's a committee of conference. So the House and the Senate are trying to work out their differences. They're actually meeting today at 3. And they seem to really be in different places in terms of what they want from this outcome. Senator Phil Baruth, you know, has been pretty clear that at this point he thinks that a delay is absolutely necessary to keep chaos from happening come July 1st, and, you know, that he wants to really give as many people the opportunity to delay as possible. And that's pretty notable because Phil Baruth, you know, is an extremely strong proponent of Act 46, and he really wants to see this law succeed. So this isn't coming from a lawmaker that was skeptical of mergers. And on the House side, I think there is a real reticence to give this leeway to school districts that are viewed as having been reckless.
Hmm.
So I think there's a real tension there about whether or not you know, to give this extra room or not, and we'll have to see what they come up with. But there's a very different philosophical approach to this, and I think there's a nervousness by people who want to see a delay that the House will slow walk this. But we'll have to see. They could come together today on a final deal.
That's right. You never can tell what's going to happen in the last couple of weeks of the session.
You really can't.
Lola DeFore is VT Digger's education reporter. Lola, I really appreciate you giving us the lay of the land today on Act 46.
Yeah, no problem.
We are talking about Act 46 and the handful of communities out of compliance with state regulations about merging districts. And we're looking at what's happening now ahead of the July 1st deadline. Again, in a few minutes, we'll talk with the Westminster School Board chair about what's happening in that community. But first, we're going to look at the legal issues surrounding this situation. Rebecca says from Brattleboro, I'm still so angry over this process. I don't know if I'll ever vote in a school-related election again. At least twice I went to vote when this merger was on the ballot. Both times, the towns involved in the proposed merger, Brattleboro, Dummerston, Putney, Guilford, and Vernon, voted against it, sometimes overwhelmingly. Our legislators wrote an escape clause into the law. We had an alternative structure prepared for the state board to consider in compliance with the law, and yet we are being forcibly merged. Under the merger, we will lose 4 active town school boards that functioned well and represented us in the decision-making process for our schools. Instead, we'll have 1 mega board and a bunch of toothless committees. That is not an improvement. This moves governance away from the people and ought to be, if it is not, against the Constitution of the state of Vermont. And Mike in Middlebury says the school funding system seems to be what needs to be reformed rather than the small schools. Though ruled unconstitutional, the pre-Act 60 models of towns locally funding their own schools seems like a much better option than where we're heading currently. If a small community wants to keep its school, let them, so long as they pay for it. Currently, this isn't an option for them and for the larger towns that are now directly subsidizing these small schools. The only hope of a reduction in taxes is to begin closing schools. Let's get to the legal framework here for what's being contested in Vermont courts. Lori Beyronavand is Associate Dean and Professor at Vermont Law School and joins us now. It's nice to have you with us, Professor.
Thank you for having me, Jane.
All right. So we heard from Lola DeFore a little bit about what's happening with Act 46 district mergers and where some towns are out of compliance and are, in fact, suing the state. More than 30 districts have joined a lawsuit, making a couple of different arguments, including saying that forcing these mergers is unconstitutional, at least in the way that it has been presented. Now, Franklin County Judge Robert Mello has dismissed several of those complaints, including the question of constitutionality, and he did so earlier this month. But, Lori, as I understand it, that doesn't mean that this argument is without merit, right? He was anticipating that this is going to go to the Supreme Court, and given the deadlines we're under, it's just speeding up that process?
Yeah, so in the judge's opinion, the plaintiffs in the Athens case that Lola was talking about have alleged six different counts, and the Judge Mello's opinion essentially dealt with three of those and left the others unresolved. And his reasoning was basically that these three issues, which are largely constitutional, are threshold issues that would need to be decided, or at least the resolution of them would help decide the other issues. So from his perspective, issuing a decision that resolved some of the constitutional issues so that the plaintiffs could then appeal that to the Supreme Court and have some final disposition on those issues might then have some bearing on the remaining issues that they presented in the case.
What's your read on the constitutionality question, the arguments for and against?
It's interesting. So I took a look at some history of the Vermont Constitution, because one of the arguments that the plaintiffs are making is that under the Education Clause of the Vermont Constitution, which is Article 68, that towns are supposed to maintain schools. And I think there was a comment that actually came up on your website that someone pointed to the provision that currently exists in Vermont's constitution. And as it was written originally, it essentially said that a competent number of schools ought to be maintained in each town. So that was the original provision in the Vermont Constitution, and that later got amended to say something similar, but it said that that towns should maintain schools unless the General Assembly permits otherwise, which essentially is giving the legislature the ability and the opportunity to provide other means for providing education than requiring that towns maintain schools.
That seems like a really big out. If the legislature, if what our current constitution says is that, you know, all towns need to maintain schools unless the legislature comes up with something different. I mean, boy, that's a big get out of jail free card.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's unusual to have such a strong commitment to education, and Vermont's constitution is really unique in the sense that it recognizes this commitment to education, and it has a long history of that. But I think ultimately it probably felt unfeasible to require towns to maintain schools. And my sense is that maybe towns themselves didn't want to have the obligation to maintain schools. So this provision that we currently have obviously gives the legislature to provide another means for providing education, but it also reaffirms the notion that the state is responsible for the provision of public education and not the individual towns.
So, you know, I know that this is going to likely come before the Vermont Supreme Court, and the justices there have the ultimate responsibility of ruling on this. But does that argument then by the Vermont towns have merit to say? And there are a couple of, you know, caveats to how they're describing this unconstitutionality. But, you know, does that hold water, that argument?
I would say that the other issue that they're one of the other constitutional issues that they're raising, which deals more with the legislature's ability to delegate lawmaking authority to the Board of Education, or at least that's the way that the plaintiffs have presented it, that argument probably has more legs. There was a concern from the plaintiffs that only the Constitution in Vermont vests only the legislature with the ability to create towns, et cetera. And in creating Act 46 and then subsequently Act 49, that the Vermont legislature has unlawfully delegated that authority to the Board of Education by giving them so much discretion.
You think that's a better argument or maybe a closer one to watch?
I mean, I think there are some questions around that and what it is exactly that the legislature was delegating to the board. It's one of those issues, even in federal law, that winds up being an interesting sort of gray area to decide whether a legislature is actually delegating away its lawmaking functions or whether they're simply delegating to an agency, or in this case, the Board of Education, the ability to execute or implement the directives of the law. And I think from the plaintiff's perspective, they would certainly suggest that what the Board of Education has done is affected their rights and responsibilities, which we typically think of as lawmaking, rather than law implementation.
Now, Judge Mello was silent on three other points of contention in this lawsuit. Again, this is the larger lawsuit, what's being called right now the Athens case. It's more than 30 districts in the state of Vermont have joined this. And the other arguments that they're talking about, they say that this process that the State Board of Education went through was arbitrary and capricious. They say that it basically makes it so that there are two strata or different stratas of treatment for schools and taxpayers and students now throughout this. And so, there are three arguments that Judge Mello didn't rule on. But the three that he dismissed, now they can be brought to the Supreme Court. So is there a chance now, Lori, that we're going to be seeing basically two halves of this court case argued in two different courts, and then potentially the second half again going to the Vermont Supreme Court? I mean, it just seems like a weird way to do this.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of Judge Mello's opinion, he certainly references the fact that courts discourage piecemeal resolution of cases, which is essentially what his opinion on Friday did, was basically split the issues in the case. But I think from his perspective, because this July 1st deadline is looming, these three issues that he decided, allowing the plaintiffs to be able to appeal that to the Supreme Court, if those are going to affect the resolution of the other issues, then it's important just to sort of like keep that train rolling from his perspective. In some instances, when something goes up on appeal like this to the Supreme Court, it may be that the remaining issues are stayed or sort of held by the court pending resolution of the other issues to the Supreme Court. The opinion didn't really give any indication of necessarily what's going to happen. It sounded like maybe some of these issues that are remaining are going to continue to move forward with the plaintiffs presenting facts and evidence in support of them. But yeah, what you just suggested could absolutely happen is that you could have part of the case go up to the Supreme Court, have some of these remaining issues be pending in the lower court and potentially being decided by the lower court, in which case those then may also get appealed. Although if the Supreme Court ultimately decides that the legislature unlawfully delegated authority to the State Board of Education under Act 46 and Act 49, then it's likely that all of these issues kind of go away because they didn't have the authority to do the things that they did in the first place.
Right. Although, boy, I mean, that creates a whole set of other messes for communities that have already merged districts.
Yes.
And yeah, and certainly would be a massive mess. We'll just say it that way.
Yeah.
Lori Bayronovand is Associate Dean and Professor at Vermont Law School. I really appreciate you helping us flesh out the legal framework for this large lawsuit against the state. Thank you.
Thank you.
When we come back, we'll go directly into one of the communities dealing with this issue and pushing against the state rules, actually pushing against them in a way that other communities are not even making a sort of a dual track here for what to do come July 1st. We're going to talk to the school board chair in Westminster. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we're looking at what's happening as the last handful of Vermont school communities to merge face a July 1st deadline. We've just heard about the legal issues involved in the districts that have taken the state to court over the forced district mergers. Well, what's it actually like in those communities, and what are these conversations that are happening at the school board level? We're going to turn to one community now. As I said at the top of the show, Westminster has balked at forming a combined district with the nearby towns of Athens and Grafton, passing its own individual school budget at town meeting this year. That is not acceptable to the state. Joining us now is Westminster School Board Chairman David Major. David, it's nice to have you on the program.
Thank you for having me.
So why did you basically go against what the state has told you to do and say, look, we're going to move forward as if we can just keep our school district, and our single individual district budget, and we're not doing anything else. We don't want your merger. We're not doing it.
Well, we were elected by our town to do that, to run the school district, and the town had voted in 2017 at town meeting time against merging, and it felt like that was our duty, that was our responsibility to do as we had been elected to do, and as we have done for well over a century, to come up with a town school budget and to move forward as we always have.
My understanding is that other communities who are in the same position as you, who don't want to merge or don't want to do the merger that the state board is saying, this is what we have planned for you, are basically operating on dual tracks. They're sort of creating a unified board and getting a budget in place for a merged district, but also doing their own individual thing because you don't know what's going to happen by July 1st with either the legislature or the court case. Why are your three communities, Athens, Grafton, and Westminster, not going that route?
Every part of the state is a little different, and in this part of the state, there is very, very little, if a completely non-existent support for the merger that the State Board of Education requires of us in their November 30 ruling. And we had all three towns had voted against merger by large margins. All three towns together with our neighboring town, which we are part of a supervisory union with, Rockingham, had put together a very thorough alternative governance structure, as the Act 46 law asked us to do if we had come up with a no vote for full merger. And so we'd followed all the steps. We have been acting under that alternative governance structure, sort of following what we had designed. It's going very, very well. We're all collaborating in a number of ways. And to get this ruling on November 30, which pretty much took us by surprise because it was against what the Agency of Education had recommended on June 1. They essentially had come up with a plan on June, statewide plan on June 1 that the Board of Education was to approve or amend or something after its set of hearings. Well, the original Agency of Education's plan did not have the towns merged. So we were taken by surprise late fall that we were required to merge, and locally, from the local perspective, it makes no sense.
Can you talk a little bit more about that, David? I mean, why is this three-town district merger something that you don't like?
Because the Westminster is a town right on the Connecticut River. It's got a much bigger population than Athens and Grafton, which are more in the mountains of Windham County. And they are, while they share a border along a ridge line, Westminster does with Athens, there is no road that goes between the two without going through a variety of other towns, either Rockingham or Townsend, Dummerston, Brookline, and or Putney, and so it is a driving quickly in a car, you can get from one school to the other in about half an hour. But in half an hour or a little more, and by bus it's a lot more. And usually when it's raining in Westminster, it's snowing at the Athens-Grafton School in Grafton. So there's geographical considerations. Then there's financial considerations. Westminster had an addition on its school a few years ago. It took out a fairly large loan to make that happen. We're still paying it off. For that reason and others, our property tax rate is a lot higher than the property tax rates in Athens and Grafton. As a single district, the Athens and Grafton tax rates would go up to almost if the budgets were just combined and their spending was the same as it is now, the Athens and Grafton property tax rates would go up a lot, like 25% or so, to meet the Westminster tax rate. Because the Westminster population is so much greater, the school population and otherwise is so much greater, it will outweigh any effect Athens and Grafton have. So their property tax rates would go up a lot. So in order to avoid that, the new union district would have to either cut programming substantially or raise the property tax rates in those two towns by unacceptable amounts.
Which would sort of go against the aims of Act 46, at least as stated by the legislature in the first place. David, I don't think we have time to go into the fact that that Westminster had originally thought of an idea to merge with Rockingham, which you mentioned as one of the surrounding communities, and that didn't work out. But I do want to ask you about what you're going to do come July 1st, if there is not some other plan made by the legislature, or, you know, if there is not a court ruling that goes in your favor, what do you do?
I don't know. We're all a little confused by that. The legislature and the Board of Education have put us in an impossible position. We're being asked to form a new union district without the consent of the people. That is, the electorate that in Athens, Grafton, and Westminster is, so far as we know, 100% against this. And to require them, the electorate, to get together to approve decisions creating this district, and you know when the annual meeting is going to be, and wonder what rules, and all of those sort of little, and who's elect a board when there is no one who wants to volunteer to be on elected on the board, to all of that kind of thing. It's putting us in an impossible position. Of hello, can you hear me?
Yes, yeah, we have you, David.
Interruption there, putting us in an impossible position of somehow trying to force our electorate to do something where there is no support. If the legislature wanted us to merge, it shouldn't have asked us to vote and wanted to require us to merge. It shouldn't put it through a democratic process, because in this case, the democratic process, there is no consent here. And So it's an impossible. And I have sympathy with the people in the Agency of Education. They're being asked to implement a law on a population that has understands from the local perspective that it's folly to do it.
Boy, it's from the outside, of course, David, interesting to follow. From the inside, I'm sure feels very fraught, very tense, and in some cases, I'm sure for many people, quite emotional. And I appreciate you sharing a little bit about your process and where things stand. David Major is chair of the Westminster School Board. Thanks for talking with us.
Surely.